Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is February 9th, 2021, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. I'm joined today by Kevin Combs, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, hey.
I'm also joined by Nicole Thomas, Vice President, Information Sales and Service. Hello, Nicole.
Hello, Michael.
Happy Holy WASDI Day to both of you, and thank you for joining us, all you listeners out there. Today, we're going to recap the WASDI report, but I'll just give a shout out to congratulations to Tom Brady and the team there at the Buccaneers and Gronkowski and all the great defense folks, and sorry for the Chiefs fans until next year. I couldn't believe some of the throws that Mahomes had. Pretty amazing. He basically was doing
Matrix. Yeah, he made a lot of great throws when he wasn't on his back.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Like, okay. Maybe not necessarily the thing I would have highlighted, but okay.
Well,
okay.
Going with my predictions.
Go Bucks. Always, good job, yeah, Bucks.
Good for them, and we'll...
It's always good to see some new blood winning. You know, it's not like we've had Tampa Bay winning a lot.
Yeah. But
to the same comment there, seven? Do we really need to watch Tom Brady win seven times? I know he's from Northern California and all that. I should probably have some sympathy, but Tuck rule.
Yeah.
That was bogus. What more can I
do? Do you root for the team? You give the congrats to the team.
That's right.
Awesome coaching staff. They built a pretty good team in a relatively short period of time. You get kudos for that.
Pretty amazing.
And then I don't have to, you know, talk too much about Brady because we all know how I feel about that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, congratulations to them. Today, guys and gals, I thought we would talk about the WASDI report. And Nicole, in typical fashion, let's start with you. And I'm going to start it off with saying... was corn a little calming today?
It was. That's a great way to put it. It was almost like a meditation app.
Ah, I love it.
A calming effect to the report this morning. Although there are still some things that we want to keep an eye on over the next few weeks. So, you know, the good news is, as far as the ending stocks reduction was concerned, it was relatively minimal for the U.S., down 50 million bushels due to an increase to exports. Those are now projected at 2.6 billion. Market was anticipating a drop in stocks, but something a little closer to 1.4 billion, maybe even a little under that, just based off of the strength of export shipments thus far, the sales on the books, and where cumulative sales stand today isn't too far off from where the projection is now. But because it was a relatively minimal reduction to ending stocks, the corn market future side responded with a bit of a drop, double digits in some cases. So I'm sure for folks still looking to get covered in 2021 futures contracts that they were took a sigh of relief, anticipating that this report could lead to some fireworks as far as that market was concerned.
Sure.
Now, the more interesting thing for me was the global balance sheet. So we actually saw an increase to global ending stocks of 3 million metric tons. That puts us at about 286.5 million metric tons. Now, this is where I think over time the market's going to do a little bit of analysis and evaluation of exactly what that number's all about. So, you know, as far as Argentinian and Brazilian production, they were left unchanged at 47.5 and 109 million metric tons, respectively. We have seen the weather improve a little bit in South America, but it's still dry in Argentina, and we've got wet weather now. When the rain comes at the wrong time, the wet weather in Brazil, that's slowing harvest progress. So we're a little behind last year, and that will be something to keep an eye on, of course, in terms of, you know, getting a handle on what the actual, you know, sort of production number is for Argentina and first season Brazilian corn, as well as planted hectareage for the safrinha crop in Brazil. That's going to go into the ground a little late because the first crop did. And then, you know, kind of ultimately seeing where total production comes out for both of those countries. But that's not the most interesting element of the global balance sheet. What was more interesting was that Chinese imports were raised by 6.5 million metric tons to 24. Feed demand was raised by six. So almost all of that to 206. And the net result was a 4.5 million metric ton increase to ending stocks in China, now projected a little over 196 million metric tons. And it was the change in the Chinese numbers that really had the effect of raising that ending stocks, the global ending stocks projection. And you kind of wonder if, like, maybe that's a little misleading, you know, because in one sense, you know, we've known that Chinese purchases were going to be pretty significant, and that's had a lot to do with the rally. But if you look at, you know, what would maybe sound like a good number at 196 million metric tons for 2021, that's actually China's lowest ending stocks number since the 2014, I believe it's 2014-15 marketing year. So something to keep an eye on longer term, as well as these stories of ASF picking up in a few hog populations within China. And of course, what, you know, not only the impact of that on their efforts to rebound with hog production in China, but also feed demand in countries capable of exporting pork and other meat products if the need arises, if this does turn into a thing. So we'll watch that closely. But the bottom line is futures, like I mentioned, came under a little pressure today. Basis, on the other hand, is appreciating across the country, particularly on the user side. And, you know, probably from a processor standpoint, they're probably going to want to, you know, throw in a little more risk premium on those summer months, until we can kind of see how things unfold with export demand for the, you know, next three to four months, and see what we get out of South America and when they can really start getting into the global market in a major way. And of course, that then means your net corn costs are coming up with both basis and futures rising. And, you know, fortunately, I guess it kind of comes down to timing on corn futures. If you got in before, you know, the grunt of this rally, you're probably looking at net corn cost somewhere in the mid twos. You could potentially see it even get up into the threes later. You're getting some offset from strong co-product values. But if you're getting in late, you're probably already well above $3 and could see that go higher depending on when you pull the trigger on those futures. So that's the corn scenario.
Cool.
Want to talk a little bit about soybeans and what happened there?
Absolutely. A little bit different, right?
A little bit different. Well, I'll say this. The ending stocks number did fall very close to, you know, sort of analyst expectations. We did see that increase to the export category. 20 million bushels now puts it at 2.25 billion. And that was the only change as far as the soybean balance sheet was concerned. But like I said, the average trade expectation was somewhere around 121 million bushels. So very close to that. We also were anticipating lower production estimates for Argentina and Brazil. So we saw some modest ones there, down 400,000 tons for Argentina, down 600,000 tons for Brazil. So your global ending stocks dropped by about a million metric tons to about 83.4 million metric tons for the current year. And of course, I think, you know, really what people are going to be focused on as far as the beans are concerned is recognizing that we could very well be in a 2-year cycle, meaning it's going to take another crop season to really get through this tightness. So going to need those acres. We'll see how farmers respond to that next month with the prospective plantings report. And it should be interesting just considering prices for everything seems to be rising. Even took a look at cotton today. That's come up quite a bit over the last 4 months. It's like that market saying, please don't take all the acres from us. But that's a real possibility and something we'll be following closely. And then as far as soybean oil is concerned, we did see an additional upward adjustment to the biodiesel category, which has been pretty amazing. We've talked about it on more than a few occasions on the podcast, how resilient renewable diesel, biodiesel demand has been throughout COVID and beyond. And, you know, you've seen some capacity come online out west that's certainly having an impact on crude soybean oil basis. So those values are about a penny stronger this year than they were a year ago, which from a basis standpoint is a pretty significant increase year on year. And definitely something to keep an eye on moving forward, that food category, if it stays relatively flat or whether or not we see a little growth in that show up a little later here, that will help to keep that tight. But, you know, for buyers of soybean oil, more than a little disheartening to wake up this morning, sure, and see the March contracts now. I didn't see where it closed, but at least this morning surpassed 46 cents a pound.
Oh, my gosh.
We haven't been near these levels in quite a while. And depending on how that crush demand plays out through the year, which is, you know, directly tied to the beans and bean availability, we may lose some of the benefit of the strong oil production we've seen up to this point that has helped to, you know, sort of lessen the decline of ending stocks for soybean oil. So things to watch.
It was amazing on those oil numbers because, like you mentioned, it ended up at 46.52, up 89.
Yeah.
But what caught my attention even more so was when you looked at the deferred months, we're up over a penny.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. Yeah, we're firmly in the 40s now, which probably has a few people like, I thought that 38, 39 cents looked okay for those January 22 and March 2022 contracts. But
yeah, now you gotta go to January 23
yes,
to get that under 39 cents.
Yeah.
Well, don't they say like with age after 40, it's all downhill from here? So when are we going to switch numbers on soybean oil?
Well, Mike, you are a prime example of that.
Okay, okay.
You see it every day.
you left yourself open for that
I
one,
did.
Buddy.
I was setting it up.
Oh,
I
put sorry. It on a if he T hadn't jumped Kevin. On it, I would have.
I know. I put it on a T for Kevin. all right. Anything else on soybean oil? We'll move over to sugar.
Yeah, let's do sugar.
All right, Kevin. Well, boy, all I can say is production.
Production, and more production was the theme of the day. So we had more beet sugar, 54,000 tons. So, you know, going back to November, they lowered the number. We were kind of scratching our heads because we were thinking it was going to go up. And now, you know, through January and February, we kind of caught back up and, you know, we were expecting the number to be around 5 million tons. And now we're at 5.05 million tons. And, you know, they cited a little bit higher sugar content recovery in the beets as the reason, and pretty much across all the growing regions except for the upper Midwest, which would be some of the Red River Valley where they, you know, were planted later again this year. So I think this number is probably going to be pretty close. They did cite a little bit of caution as far as beet piles and, you know, making sure they're able to get through all the beets and actually recover all the sugar that they think is there. But at February, it looks pretty good. We still got a little bit of time processing out west. And then, you know, the Red River Valley will probably go through April, maybe, you know, early May at a plant or two. So it's looking good and a lot better than what it was looking like a couple months ago.
Great.
Yeah. And then on the cane side, where it's kind of where we got the surprise today, we're expecting a big crop in Louisiana and see those numbers come up. And we had been hearing some of those rumors. Was Louisiana's final production going to be 2 million tons? Well, we ended up a little bit short of that, but the fiscally adjusted number was 1.931 million tons, up 45,000 tons, but the actual crop, because of some early harvest above typical levels, was over 1.95 million tons for a record for Louisiana. So amazing what Louisiana went through this year with all the tropical storms, et cetera. We're expecting there to be, you know, some significant damage from the strong winds and sugar content to be down from all the, you know, waterlogged cane fields, but they really came through well. So
yeah,
great crop for Louisiana. And then, you know, the lone downside was Texas, but, you know, Texas is very small, so not an impact on supply demand, but it was down 8,000 tons. But it's not often we can sit here and talk about a February WASDE report and see production up 156,000 tons overall. Mm. And of course,
yeah,
you know, Mike, we've been watching it every day here because a lot of people are a little bit short from the user side as far as coverage on the 16 markets. And with all this positive news, more beet sugar to compete for deliveries, more raw cane sugar. What happened to the 16? It was up.
Today, it was.
Answer
anyone?
Bueller?
Bueller? Yeah, it was.
I was just going to check to see if it did anything different.
It wasn't up a lot, but here we are now. You know, we're looking at the May contract, 29.70 closed today, the July contract, 29.60. So still remaining very elevated. You know, there's good news out there with today's report. Mexico production is coming along nicely. They should be seeing vessels shipping this month. A lot more than what we've seen in the past as, you know, production's caught up. They've got a fair amount of below 99.2 sugar produced to ship now. I know it's late and all, but it's just amazing that this market's been able to hold as long as it has. And, you know, I still think there's a chance that we see this market break over the next 60 days, but it seems like I keep saying 45 to 60 days.
Yeah.
A lot here over the last 60 days. So it's a very thin, illiquid market. It's going to probably take a little bit longer than we think. And just have to see, you know, who's going to let loose of the raw sugar supplies, and are the logistics and supply chain of raw sugar going to catch up in time to where we see that for a portion of this year, or are we going to have to wait for a reset on the 2021-2022 crop year?
Okay. Anything else they did that's topical? I think from a commercial standpoint.
From this, you know, specialty markets, there was a little bit of information there. They raised the tier two import 60,000 tons. And basically what they were citing was an oversubscription to the tranches for organic sugar. You know, they call it the specialty refined quota, but about typically 95% of that sugar is organic. And as they saw strong demand for applying for those tranches, which means that sugar is sitting here in bonded warehouse, they did decide that they need to raise that 60,000 tons. So huge amount of sugar coming in under that quota. And
wow.
So that's going to be like 170,000 tons, which, you know, when you look at the amount of organic sugar and consumption, what it used to be and what it's now, I mean, this is obviously suggesting that that number is continuing to grow.
Yep. And sounds like they needed a little relief. So they got it from the USDA.
No doubt. So it helps. Well,
anything on the commercial side you want to talk about?
You know, from a commercial side, I think this kind of starts to paint the picture for stronger stocks to use ratio, maybe, you know, being a little bit better carry out into next year. But we know next month the USDA will reassess Mexico. But it looks, if all these other numbers stay current, they don't change deliveries and consumption at all, it looks like we're going to be about a 14.25% stocks to use ratio. So I think you got some optimism for 2022 price negotiations, but it's really going to come down to the beet crop and plantings and getting things going there. If, you know, we see a chance of a really big beet crop, you know, the Red River Valley gets their beets in the ground early this year instead of late, like we've had happen the last few years, I think that's what's going to set the tone for some competition. But, you know, the market for 2022 is super, super quiet at this point. Nothing's really taking place, which, you know, normally we start talking about the market at the colloquium, which would normally have been next week or the week after. And this year it's virtually in the first week of March. So that's not taking place. And, you know, as you and I have seen the last couple of years, negotiations have been dragging out a little bit further because the spot price has been elevated over what the typical contract prices run. And it takes a while for the processors to feel confident on the size of their crops and what things are going to look like. So they're holding tight for the time being. And I think this year's kind of a better situation than what we had last year, of course, but still going to take a while for people to have confidence in the crop size and whatnot before they really want to push any marketing. So right now I'd say prices would be a hair higher than what they were for 2021. But, let's talk in July and we might see a different picture if the crops look good.
Got it. Great recap, Kevin. Well, thank you very much, Nicole. Thank you, Kevin. We're going to wrap this one up. But before we let everybody go, I want to remind everybody of our 2-day virtual event coming up on April 27th and 28th. It's our spring seminar, Back to the Future, the Food Revolution, I should say, resumes.
Either one works.
Not revelation. Maybe it's a revelation.
Yeah, right. It's a revelation. There may be some revelations at that seminar. So
I think there will be. And if you're interested, go ahead and check out McKinney-Fulvell.com to register. It's a whopping $250 per company. We're helping people out here with some great intelligence, a great 2-day event, and I look forward to talking to and seeing everybody virtually there. And again, register at McKinney-Fulvell.com. As I always like to say, live with an attitude of gratitude. And until next time, take care, everybody.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye now.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney-Fulvell's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Fulvell.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.